KSVY Sonoma.
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear.
Good morning and welcome to Sonoma, California. My name is Harry Blum, and I want to introduce our host, Mari Best.
Well, good morning. And here we have, once again, always, almost always, blue skies and a big smile on my face today. You can probably see it or hear it on the radio, because with us today, we have none other than Stephen Stubbins, who is the co-executive director and founding member of Transcendence Theater. And, the time today is about finding out the secrets of Stephen Stubbins.
Oh, wait till you meet me. That's
hilarious. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. I am so honored to be here, to be on your show. As a longtime listener, to get to actually be here with you guys is such a blessing.
Well, this is exciting for us because none of this transcendence stuff happens by accident. You know, we know there's a lot of manipulation going on from the universe, but it takes people, special people like yourself and Amy and the rest of the team.
Brad,
and of course Leah.
Yeah.
Yes, to bring in the energy that just is so vibrant and is just rocking our world and reminding us that anything is possible. And that's what transcendence is, that is the key to transcendence. And so there was a time when we talked about music, and as I always like to do with our guests on the show, I like to introduce the music that has been an inspiration throughout the journey.
Yeah.
And this is not just about the journey with transcendence, but toward the happening of the transcendence.
Yeah. So, well, in the continuation of, like, obviously transcendence, even transcendence is at a very beginning stage. I mean, people can look at what's kind of appeared from nothing for us over the last couple of years and think, wow, they made it. But the vision of what we feel is like a real movement in not only the arts world, but the world itself, which, of course, you guys are part of that movement. And we feel like we can be a voice and an embodiment of that movement. We're still so young on that journey, and I myself still feel like, we've only just scratched the surface. So we're not there. We're getting there.
Oh, yes. And I already and always have a sense of it that you are in this moment right now capturing all the thoughts that are propelling you to the following moment.
Yeah.
There is, you know, after this conversation is over, it's behind us. Now we're moving on to even greater things. And, you know, there's one thing I do want to share before we go any further, because it just kind of rocked my world this little bit from Mike Dooley today, who gives a special little message every day called From the Universe. And he says, usually the best way to find the yellow brick road of your life is to start out on the dusty dirt one and then let yourself become so preoccupied in making the best of it, having fun and challenging yourself, that you can actually stop paying attention to the path until one day, not so long from now, with a new best friend, wearing cool clothes, feeling awesome, a teeny bit taller, fresh from a wild vacation, looking for the path you just left, you'll notice that it's 24 carats, baby. And you'll wonder for a long, long time sipping on some exotic fruit drink when the transformation actually took place. I think that's such a neat thing. And
it's
just
so beautiful.
Yeah. And it spoke to me. However, what I want to know, let's pick one of the songs that you introduced to me.
Sure.
To get us into the flow of where we want to be. So,
well, let's see. Do you have the list?
Oh, I have the list right here.
These songs, I mean, it's kind of an untraditional choice of songs here, but actually, let's do One Day Like This. Just to tell you a little bit about the song. So, I actually create for the last like five. To, I guess it's been since 2007, I've created a mix CD for all my friends where I do my year in music. And I send it out. It's like, it's my thing. And I'd send it out to like 30 or 40 people every year.
Oh,
and
wow.
So this was the beginning of my CD 2 years ago. And it's this, it's Throw Your Curtains Wide. And I feel like it was this moment. You'll hear it in the song where it's like, it's time to burn the past, what you're saying about being in the moment, but also like, it's like actually, sorry to continue on about this, but it's actually like my idea of even like of fear. I feel like fear is this giant warehouse with all these big curtains. And if you can just like tear down the curtains, the sunlight will come in and you just keep tearing down the curtains. So anyway, this song reminds me of that.
That's perfect. That's a perfect introduction. And that was One Day Like This by Elbow. And please elaborate for us.
Well, you know, it's funny actually about that song is one of the things that I got used to saying after I met Amy Miller actually was, you know, this is the best day ever. You know, each day. And, at first you can be like, kind of like, well, how can this be the best day ever? Yesterday was the best day ever. But it's really about like what you were saying before. It's like being in the moment every day can be the best day ever. And the name of that song is One Day Like This, you know.
Yes.
Fresh morning. But I was going to say about that poem you read before, you know, about being on that dirt road and living your own life. It touches me so truly because of my path,
yes.
Which has been, I connect with the term breakdown to breakthrough. I don't think you have to break down to break through, but I know every breakdown that I've had in my life, you know, not like a huge breakdown, but like every big stumble has been a breakthrough for me, and I have definitely followed that dirt road path to be here. Like now, to get to live in Sonoma, like it's my favorite place in the world. To get to live near you guys, and it's been one day you do look around, you're like, oh, thank God for all those, you know, all those huge challenges and all those things I never thought I could climb back out of, because they've led me here. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. In every challenge, there's an opportunity to experience perfection.
Yeah,
and that's what you're doing. When you feel that joy, that is perfection. I mean, who can elaborate on that?
And the challenge pushes you
yes.
to be better and bigger and greater. Yeah. And without that push, sometimes you wouldn't. You know, sometimes I wouldn't be who I am without these one beautiful scars that I have.
So,
yeah.
Stephen.
Yeah.
Where did it begin? Tell me. Take me back. Take me back.
Well, okay. Well, the very beginning, I have to shout out to my family, actually. I have two brothers and a sister, Scott Patrick and my brothers, and Tracy's my sister, and we're like just the closest. I grew up walking to school from the time I was in first grade to the time I was in eighth grade, and I would sing to the houses. I grew up just wanting to sing, and I remember I would even when I'd get home at night, I remember I would write songs in my head, and I would that night fall asleep trying to remember the songs I wrote and trying to sing them, and it's funny because that's the very beginning for me, something wanting to emerge, something from child Stephen being like, there's music in you, and. So it's been something I've returned back to, too. My journey's been long and winding. I did a lot of summer stock. I did a lot of singing when I was in high school and junior high. And I was in boy choir when I was a kid. But then I did my first professional show when I was a sophomore in high school. I went off and I did summer stock after my junior year of high school. After my senior year of high school, I went to Europe and did a summer voice program in Austria. I spent the summer in Austria. And so much of this stuff is actually thanks to my mom, who has been the champion of my life. Mm. I can never thank her enough. I ended up actually went to college in St. Louis, did summer stock every summer. I worked in Nebraska, I worked in Illinois, I worked in Florida, I did two summers out in Montana. Right out of there, I ended up at Disney World. I got cast as Doug in the Doug musical, based on the cartoon of Doug, where I actually got my equity card. From there, I moved to New York and was like ready to take on the big city. Ended up on a Disney cruise ship, did a bunch of regional work, got shows. But throughout the whole thing, I was learning and growing and doing all of it. But I hit kind of a wall at a certain point. Where it all meant too much, especially the business of New York. It's so competitive. I mean, even just the experience of waking up at like, you know, 4 in the morning, taking a subway in to get in line to be there by 5:30 in the morning, to be there with 500 other people who look like you, who have, you know, and then to get to sing 8 bars and thank you, see you later. And that's like for a dinner theater show. You're like, how am I ever going to get on Broadway? Like, you know, how am I ever going to like have a family, have a life? All that stuff. The story goes, I actually ended up getting a big break. I was in the pre-Broadway premiere of Memphis, the musical, which was the pianist from Bon Jovi wrote the music to it. And Joe DiPietro did the book and the lyrics. And I had this great experience. I come back from that. I get to New York, and I'm up for two shows. One is called Silent Laughter. It's this off-Broadway show, which I get cast in. The other is the Broadway revival of Assassins. And I was up for the final part, for this cover part, to cover Doogie Howser, Neil Patrick Harris.
Wow.
I came down to me and three other guys. I didn't get it. but I got the silent laughter thing. So I was like, this is great. So it was a comedy. It was a silent, it's like a silent movie, but put on stage. So there's no singing and no talking. Of course, my voice has always been my first thing. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. But I'm a physical comedian too. And I actually did a lot of physical comedy all through college and stuff. Anyway, after 3 days, I get fired from the show.
Oops.
It was crazy. It was the most devastating thing that's ever happened to me.
Oh, my goodness.
I get fired from the show. I was in it with all the, with these Broadway people. One of the original cast members from Sweeney Todd was in it. My entire family knew what's going to come. It was in Times Square, so I couldn't walk down Times Square without running into people from the show. And I was at that fragile part of the beginning of my career, too, where I'm like, how am I ever going to work again?
Oh, gosh.
Do I leave? Do I never do this again?
Oh,
do I, and every time I think about it, do I just, you know, shrink and do something else? Or do I somehow recover from this? And I got to a very zero place. It was really my ground zero. And I was like, this is what I'm meant to do. Whether other people give me the opportunity or not, I'm here to allow whatever this is to come out. So it was this moment where I really could have gone to the dark side, where I could have shrunk as a person for the rest of my life, or I could expand into that fear, that devastation, whatever, and create who I want to be. So that's like the precursor of my story. And I can go on if you like.
Oh, yes, okay. Yes.
So I come from there, and I ended up getting cast as the lead in Tom Sawyer in Kansas City. I was flown out to Kansas City to do this wonderful summer. So after I got fired from that show, I ended up in Kansas City, and I had this transformative time where I'm like, I am creating this. And it was a very powerful time for me to get back in my power. But even then, I did another summer out in Martha's Vineyard, and I realized that my identity was too tied to the arts. And I was like, I care too much. And I need to be a person first and then an artist. And the artist needs to be in a healthy place. So I actually quit the business for a year and a half. And I worked at a hedge fund in New York. And I literally was like, I'm not coming back. I'm going to, you know, I'll do whatever, but I'm not going to sing. I'm just see what happens. I'm going to see what happens. And after a year, I remember I was walking home to Brooklyn. And I was like, I'm invisible. I might as well not be alive. And I realized even more. It was another step for me where I was like, I got to do it. And I was like, it's everything I'm afraid of, but that means I'm going to grow every day. And I'm not going to shrink and atrophy. So I come back. Within a year, I end up in Mary Poppins on Broadway. End up booking shows. I've been, that time, I was also taking class from one of my mentors, Jen Waldman, who hopefully someday we'll hear this interview. I absolutely love and adore her so much. And she's given me and so many artists in New York a springboard for their own lives and careers. And so anyway, so I end up in Mary Poppins. And I also, on the side, created a business of my own with some friends of mine to help artists move into New York. And had always was like building websites, doing all these other things. There's this, you know, this energy about me that wants to do business, that wants to continually learn, that wants to be an artist, and then wants to create. And I didn't know how all these different elements all came together. But 9 months into, actually it was about 7 months into Mary Poppins, my dear friend Mike Kirsch, who was one of Amy's best friends, sends me the video of Amy talking about Mexico and this first project. And I, that night, was at my friend's, at a friend's re-wedding party. And my friend's like, Stephen, how's it going? How's the show? How's the Broadway show? And the thing that people should know about Mary Poppins is I had a chorus contract where I could run in that until it closed. So it actually closed this year. So I could have run in that show for 6 years. Unless they bought me out with, like, I don't know, thousands and thousands of dollars to buy me out. So anyway, I told her that night, I was like, I think I'm going to quit my job and move to Mexico. I knew from the first moment of hearing Amy and tasting this vision that...
You had to be there.
Yeah. And it goes on from there.
Wow. So it looks like we're going to be doing either this or this. And I have a feeling that this is a perfect song. And
I love this song. Yeah.
So let's get in there and listen to the words of this song.
Breaks the road, are you holding on? Are you holding on to your last good?
That was called The Part Where You Let Go by him. And what I'm getting here so powerfully is the fact that you recognize that your life is your responsibility. And after all that hard knock down, you were able to grab hold and take all of the amazing gifts that you had and power them into a responsible place of taking your life forward.
Well, it's funny because I think a big part of that is getting truer. I think the big shift there is doing what other people expect of you, or doing what you think is right, or doing what you think is good, quote unquote, and then getting true. Yeah. And then releasing that truth. And that's where that song comes in too. The part where you let go. We had an artist discussion yesterday with our artists from our current Broadway Into the Stars cast, actually, and this came up then too. But Michael Beckwith at Agape in LA talks about how you can't take another spiritual step without it being a step of letting something more go. And I think that's the same thing as an artist. And I think that's the same thing on this journey of mine. It's like we're really just polishing the silver to let the silver come out, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And so that my journey continually has been surrender and letting it go. And then something 10 times more dynamic comes out than you could ever have thought of or done.
Right.
Without that.
Because the tendency to hold on to something when it's really going well, you want to hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it. And you think, oh, my goodness, I hope this never ends. Well, guess what? It does.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. And so recognizing that, it just helps.
Or the other part of that is that, like, when if I'm truly myself, or if I truly let this stuff go, that I won't be interesting enough, that I won't want the things I should want or feel the way I should feel. But what you find out is, like, it's 10 times better. You know?
What a wonderful recognizing. Yeah. Yes. And really powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to jump to a whole new arena now because it's coming up here. I want to understand, how did you ever end up being the opening act for Frank Sinatra?
Well, like I was saying, like my mom is a powerhouse, and this was somewhat tied to my mom, actually. So I really learned to sing like when I was so devastated that my voice was going to change, because I would, you know, I was a singer and I was a soprano for so long as a boy. But I learned to sing as an adult in my room, like walking on my bed after school, listening to two things: Robert Goulet singing Camelot, which I would imitate, and this Frank Sinatra karaoke CD, which I found out years later wasn't even Frank Sinatra. It was Frank Sinatra imitator.
Oh, my goodness.
So, literally, talk about, like, the power of, like, attracting things. I would sing this Frank Sinatra stuff every day, and I got this voice teacher who he would just go crazy on the piano, and we would sing all the Sinatra stuff, right? So, my high school, it was all through my high school, actually. We found out that we were going to be the opening act. There's a big concerts that happen every year in Cincinnati as a thank you to all the huge corporations that this one rich person owned in Cincinnati, Carl Lindner. And so they always bring in a big star to do these like two nights of concerts. And they actually approached our high school to be like, we want you guys to actually perform. I don't know how that happened. And they didn't even announce who the performer was going to be. Meanwhile, I'm singing Sinatra every day or whatever. And then they announce it's Sinatra. And then they say, Stephen, you're going to sing a solo. And I did Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And I have to tell you, like, I never got to even meet Sinatra, which is crazy. But I got to see his show afterwards. But that moment of when I actually got to sing in his opening act, it was one of the most transcendent moments. It was one of those where, I don't know if you've ever had this yourself, where you've done something and then you come away and you're shaky. Like you're almost like something came out of you. It was a magical. And then the next year I got to sing for Rosemary Clooney and George Clooney for a party for them. And that was through my mom and through connections that she had and through just being this, helping this thing to happen. So as a young performer, that's a great way to start out.
Certainly.
I was like, I'm ready for college, you know? Like, got a little experience there.
So. All right. So now I'm bringing you back in the journey, back into your getting the video and being propelled into action with Transcendence.
Well, Transcendence, like one of the things that I immediately set up a meeting with Mike, my good friend who was friends with Amy, and he was like, Stephen, Amy's reading, I don't know if you guys know who Harold Klerman is and the group theater. It's basically one of the people and one of those groups of people who's inspired us the most. We've been reading all their books. I mean, there's a ton of people like that. Napoleon Hill, too, Think and Grow Rich, The Laws of Success, all that stuff. Even Tony Robbins and the motivational speakers, Marianne Williamson, Michael Beckwith, it goes on and on. But where was I starting? The Harold Klerman and the group theater. Mike was like, The Fervent Years is this book. It's a phenomenal book about their rise to a collective group of artists coming together to be more about the less about the career, more about the energy of the group. And so I immediately went home and read that book. I talked to Amy, and I got caught into this vision of this is happening. But the challenge is, when you're in New York running a Broadway show, you have an agent who's making money off of you, and you, of course, have parents and all these people who have other expectations of you. They don't necessarily expect you to quit your job and move to Mexico to not make any money and never have money in sight again.
You could become their least favorite person.
You could. So I go to my agent, right? And I'm like, I got to do this right. I loved her. She was great. I sit down with her. I set up a meeting with her, and I tell her the story. I'm like, there's this thing happening in Mexico, theater company, it's attached to health and wellness, all this stuff. And I was kind of worried what she'd say, because obviously she's getting a paycheck from this, free paycheck. And she stops and she takes a pause and she's like, my husband and I quit our jobs. We sold everything we owned. We moved into RVs. We lived in RVs for an entire year. We spent 3 months in Baja. It was the most magical time of my life. I really think you should follow your dream. I was like, are you kidding? And she says, and my husband and I wrote a book about it called Quit Your Job and like Move to Mexico or something.
It's like, oh, wow.
And so I was like, well, if that's not a sign, like my New York agent is like wrote a book about how I should quit my job and move to Mexico. So, and then of course I talked to my parents about it, and I talked to, and I'm like, this is my decision. And we get down there to Mexico, and it was just that. Have you guys ever been to Baja by any chance?
Not.
It's the energy of that place. I mean, even just entering into that space, there is something. There is an opening there, and I think it was very valuable for us to get away from the energy of LA, of New York, and to get into a safe spot with a group of artists who can talk, and to be away from society, to really nurture this the baby of this dream. And of course, Sonoma feels like that a lot too. But we didn't, of course, have Sonoma at that point. Mexico was transformative for us. I mean, I can talk all about that.
I know you can. We'll do.
Yeah.
We'll do.
Well, okay, yeah. Basically, it was getting together some of the most inspired people and talented people. And literally, when we first got there, we didn't even have a schedule. We met and we would just talk. We'd get together. We even recorded a ton of these talks. And this is going to make the most amazing documentary ever. We had roundtable discussions. We would talk about the power of the mind or talk about what's missing from the arts in our careers and what we want to be to other people as a group and as individuals. We ended up doing this. We started finding ways we could be of service down there. We knew we were going to do shows and do things, but we were like, what else is there? Like, we knew that we wanted to be of service with our art. And so we started working with this orphanage. And this one day that we spent with the Casa de Paz orphanage, some of the people said it was the most proud thing, the most amazing day of their lives, mm-hmm. working with these kids. And then we created a show for the kids. We created original material for them, and then we created a video of them and it wrote a song that's all about following your dreams, and to have them be able to even go on YouTube today and retaste everything that we all experienced together. And these kids were like, when we were leaving the show, they were hanging out of the bus, holding on to us, saying, "Don't leave us."
Aww.
We chased them. It was like they even, as we were trying to leave the orphanage one day too, they blocked the gates so we couldn't leave.
Oh my god!
It's just one of those where you're like, oh my god! And you know, it's different than like, oh, I'm going to go do my chorus part or I'm going to go sing this song. It's like we are touching these kids' lives. This is why we do it.
No.
One of the other things we did was do you guys know Earth Hour?
No,
it's where they try to get everybody in the world to turn off their lights for 1 hour
save.
Yes. So we did a show where we did pieces about sustainability and greening, like of helping the earth. And then we did, during Earth Hour, after the show, we did a roundtable candlelight discussion on stage with the community with all the lights off. And then the next day we led that community into a beach cleanup there at the beach. And I'll tell you, like, the combination of all these parts, it's just so thrilling. And then we would do a musical, and then people were like, "What is going on?" Like these, you show like even at Jack London State Park when we do these Broadway, we're singing show tunes, but there's a deeper truth to it. There's a deeper energy to it. So there's like, it's that audience connection, and that's what we experienced in Mexico, and that's what we want everybody to feel and live and share.
And you know, when you and you were talking about, you know, leaving everything, getting rid of everything, cutting your lines, a book that was very, very powerful for Harry and I was called The Journey Home by Lee Carroll. Oh, and I definitely recommend that book for anybody who's contemplating a journey like Stephen Stubbins. Here you are. Yeah. He has another book. It's all about cutting away all the ties that are holding us back from our journey and our adventure of life. And so, oh my goodness, there's so many different questions that I want to go forward with here. But you have
The crazy thing is, though, like, even, you know, even after all this stuff, and even after, I mean, you always think you're going to get there. But of course, there's no there.
Uh-oh.
And we get down, you know, we get down in Mexico, and it's like, we've got no money. We've got no theater. We have no path ahead of us. We don't know what's next. I mean, it took us like 5 months to be like, we're going to get in RVs and we're going to tour the country looking for a place to settle down, but also talking to people who are smarter than us, who are the heads of the theater, you know, these institutional theaters, to figure out what our next step is. And, you know, I think a lot of people might look at the attraction stage where you're trying to create a dream or a vision as a, like, as a beautiful kind of like, easy, just simple stage, but it's a continual. You're always, at least my personal feeling is, I hope it's not true, but you're always going to come up to a block that most people are going to turn away from, and it's the commitment to be like, even when I hit the biggest block, I'm going to still keep going. Even when it makes no sense to keep going, I'm going to keep going, which happens to us all the time. that's when the dream happens. And it's the commitment to be able to go through that. And I think a lot of people stop when it gets difficult or stop when it seems impossible.
Right.
And one of the things I admire so much about Amy Miller and Brad Sarosky and Robert Petrarca and Leah Sprecher and Randy Kaye is that when things are impossible, we keep working. Because honestly, there's been so many steps that have been absolutely impossible, including when we got the RVs, we only had $14,000. We needed $40,000 to get home.
Oh, gosh.
We shot fundraising videos from RV parks in New Orleans. And we did, you know, benefits in yoga studios in South Carolina. You know, it was like, it was impossible. But we kept working.
Yes.
And we didn't sleep much, but but anyway, I mean, that's my own kind of little soapbox there.
But that's no, but you see, that's what this is all about.
Yeah,
this is why I thought of this show in the very, very beginning. I'm talking about Our Timeless Secrets. It's about sharing what works, and when you talk about, you know, hitting that wall and not giving up, it's so very important, vital for people to hear that.
Well, and the weird part about that wall is it's not just a wall of like, oh, it's tough. It's the wall of even your mental state being like, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it, whatever. And it's getting beyond that and being like, I'm going to continue to work anyway. I'm going to fight for that vision beyond sense.
And recognizing that it's not about the money. It's not That's a tool that comes and goes and comes and goes, but it's about the energy, your energy and the others that are joining you, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if people knew where we ended up 4 years ago, if at the beginning people could see where we were going to end up, we would have like 5,000 people in our company right now.
Yes.
But there were six of us who had to live in that invisible for a very long time. You know?
I'm curious. When somebody new steps into your arena and is part of this amazing group, how much of that do they actually know?
Story?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're blessed. I mean, the Index Tribune is fantastic, as well as the Sonoma Sun, which actually has a piece about us right now, which is amazing. But David Bowling actually wrote a wonderful article in the Sonoma magazine that was out. I think it's actually currently out. It came out in late June, and it tells part of the story. So some of our artists this year are actually getting to read some of the story in the magazine, which is great because it's a really powerful article. And we tell some of it, but, you know, I think the remarkable thing about a lot of these artists is they're attracted here because they also have gone through this stuff, and they've experienced the business, and they have experienced what they want to create in the business that might not necessarily be there yet. When we do our auditions and we send out to our people, we ask, this year especially, we asked a lot of questions before we even saw people's talent or heard what they sang, and we talked with them, and we're looking for like-minded people who vibe with that. And I think it's, I don't think they need to hear every piece of the story.
Of course not.
Because we're all one.
It all unfolds. All unfolds. So if you were to think of just off the top of your head, what might be the most powerful question that you might ask a possible newcomer to your group? What might be one of the most important questions?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a couple, but what motivates you as an artist? What are you passionate about in your life?
Yes.
Obviously, but then also, something to do with service too.
Yes. Right. Right.
And it's not even the artists who might not be necessarily connect their art with service yet. It's not that there's people who aren't there. It's just, I think everybody's on a different part of that path.
Right.
And we're looking for people who are at a certain stage on that path of being like, I'm ready to give.
Right.
I'm here. And the other big thing, and it's not a specific question, but is the ego piece of it.
Right.
And weeding that out, because I think that we've been hugely successful in inviting people and connecting with people who are about the group and about this community and not about themselves.
Right, right. And that's so evident when you meet up with all of them before and after a show. They're so welcoming. There's none of the aloofness that can happen from that egoic place. Isn't it such a word? Yeah.
Egoic?
Hello? Yes.
There is now.
Yeah.
So the question I have right now is, so if you were only allowed one word to describe whatever you would suggest is the most powerful tool you have in your heart arsenal, what would it be? One word. Yes. Like...
It's great. I mean, it's just where I fall on the spectrum of everything. It's surrender.
Surrender. I love it. I love it. And that's another great song that we that we have played several times. A good old song from John Denver. But
I love John Denver.
Yeah, I love John Denver. But I'm not going there now. There's too many important things. We can play that anytime. And so, okay, let's go back.
Yeah.
Let's go back to where you're in this formative stage, and now you're searching for.
So we're in
Sonoma.
Our RVs. We literally went from California to Texas to Florida to New York City to Ohio, Michigan, to Montana, then down. And we talked with these huge regional theaters. The head of the Arena Stage, which is like the biggest theater in Washington, D.C., that and the Kennedy Center are kind of the two big theaters there. And then also Trinity Rep, which has had this resident company of actors up in Rhode Island, to Steppenwolf in Chicago. We ended up coming down and talking to the head of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Oregon, which, of course, a lot of people from this community all go up there and see their shows. And they do some of the most phenomenal work that I've seen. And the guy who runs the whole thing, we're talking to him, and we are just so inspired by everything that he's done, even before he got there, when he was in LA and had his own story. But then the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and how that entire community is alive and how it's this tourist destination. So then after that, we come down through wine country, and we're like, we stop in Healdsburg for our first stop. It was actually my birthday, May 6th of 2010. And we were like, oh, my God, they have the sophistication. We're talking to people there. Sophistication. They have the tourist culture. They have nothing to do at night. They have the great food. It's like all these elements. And we're like outdoor musical theater. They don't have a big professional musical theater. They have wonderful non-professional groups and with some equity contracts here and there. But we're like, this area is ripe for this kind of an energy. But then we were like, so then we ended our trip. And we took a couple months to regroup and actually get our lives back in L.A. And we were like, okay, so we got no money. We know we want to be in wine country, one of the most expensive places in the world. What are we going to, like, try to lease land? Or I don't know. I talked to a winery. So my mom started donating hotel rooms to us. And we would take trips up here and stay in a hotel room to be able to search, talk to wineries, go around, see what was out here. And... it's such a serendipitous story. After researching for a while, we got to a point where we're like, you know what, we just need to work towards this. We need to, like, not just come up here, but we need to actually assign tasks for each of us to look into. So I was looking into equity contracts and our union status stuff to see what I could do. Brad was looking into sound and county regulations, like why something like this doesn't exist. And he started talking to people from the parks. Well, actually, sorry. So he was looking at, Amy was looking at actual other theaters, other outdoor theaters. How did they start? Where did they come from? So Brad starts talking to somebody up here, and he's like, okay, well, you know, this is our idea, big outdoor musical theater, blah, blah, blah. Like, why doesn't this exist? And they're like, well, you can't have a season of theater out here because of sound regulations. They put all these heavy sound regulations on the wineries because they don't want them having events every night. They can do it for a weekend, like B.R. Cohn can do a weekend or two weekends, but not all summer. But he just happens to mention, he's like, but it doesn't apply on state land because it's not county, it's state. So we're like, okay, state land. Amy's researching the theaters, and they're like, she's like, wait a second, all these big regional theaters like the Muni and St. Louis and, you know, Central Park's theater, they all start in the Hollywood Bowl too, I believe. They all start in parks. Yeah. So we're like, state land, parks. The day that she goes, she looks online for state parks in Sonoma is the day after the exact day after the state park closures were announced. It's like, and the fact that we've been working on this for three years or 2.5 years or whatever at this point, that the day after she sends in, well, what we do is basically we get in the car. Oh, sorry. There's a podcast actually that we're given. We find this podcast of Ruth Coleman, the head of state parks, saying that they're looking for innovative, out of the box ways of keeping these parks open. So Brad, Amy, and I, and this is on video, hop in the car that weekend. We drive from LA up here, and we just start going to parks. We don't know anybody. We just start going. We go into Annandale State Park. We find some rangers. I hop out of the car, accost these rangers with questions. They take us to the back room, and they talk to us for an hour and a half. They're like, this is a great idea. You should go to Jack London. Check it out. We walk through Jack London. We have pictures and videos. And we see this space, and it's just like, this is it. We don't know how it's going to happen, but this is it. Still, no, we don't have money to pull anything off. There's videos of Brad and I walking that ruins, being like, how many rows? How many people can you fit in here? Could somebody stand up here? Like, and Amy's like, oh, this is crazy. But so we send an email to – Amy actually sends an email to the head of the parks for the area. And he says, you know, if he gotten that email a week earlier, never would have opened – never would have responded because they didn't care. And then we found out after our first event, if they gotten it after that, everything was too chaotic with all the stuff, they never would have responded. It was the exact window of time we needed to be.
Oh, my gosh.
So we start talking to them, and they say, you can do a one-night concert and test it out. And we're like, test it out? It's like, we don't own lights or chairs. We're like, test it out. We're ready to do a season or something. I don't know. But so we're like, okay. So we have 6 weeks to put together our one-night thing. People from the state parks, they usually do these movie nights up at the park with the VMAHA. And they're saying, you know, we get like 100 people to come at the most. There's no way you're going to get like, because we're like trying to get 800 people there, right? And people are like, 20 people to 100 people are going to show up. I'm just warning you, whatever. My mom and I move up here for that. And my mom does not leave a hotel room. She does a lot of marketing and has done a lot of national media. And the two of us worked like crazy. Amy and Brad worked like crazy from LA, come up a few weeks beforehand. We sold it out with 900 people that night, one night event. It was, as David Bowling has said, he said it was a sledgehammer between the eyes, the emotion of that night. The Rangers, we brought the head of State Park up to speak. And she gave one of the most incredible speeches. From that moment, it was like people could taste it. But even that was, that event was like, I think it was what, $21,000 worth of infrastructure and payments of flying our friends from New York. And it was like, we got a small loan. We started selling tickets. It somehow panned out. All the money went to the state parks. We didn't make a cent from it ourselves. But we launched our company, and it rained the next day. So if that rain had come a day earlier, we might not be sitting here. It's just this, all these crazy serendipities. So,
wow, yeah. What an amazing and so informative as far as the feelings and the thought processes that went behind it. And you know what? I'm going to have to wind this down. So yeah. I'm going to take this song right here. I believe that
this song's been with me for a long time.
So perfect to wind it up. And I want to thank you for being with us today. And thank Transcendence Theater for all they're doing. And yes.
Do you mind if I shout out our website real fast?
Absolutely. So, let us, my next question.
Yeah, Broadway Under Stars. We actually have a show tonight and tomorrow and Saturday. And it's BroadwayJackLondon.com. Once again, that's BroadwayJackLondon.com. Thank you so much for having me. What a joy.
Oh, my pleasure, my darling. Our pleasure. And thank you for listening. And we'll take you out with this song. I Will Not Take These Things for Granted.
Amen.
One part of me just wants to tell you everything. One part just needs the quiet. And if I'm lonely here, I'm lonely here. And on the telephone, you offer reassurance. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things. How can I hold the part of me that only you can carry? Needs a strength I haven't found. But if it's frightening, I'll bear the cold. And on the telephone, you are the one.
from asylum. I'm listening. Flowers in the garden, laughter in the hall, children in the park. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things anymore. Crawl inside the wine, feel something near me. To feel this accepting, that it is lonely here, but not alone. And on the telephone, you offer dancing. I'm listening. Music in the bedroom, laughter in the hall, dive into the ocean, singing by the fire, running through the forest, standing in the wind, rolling canyons. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things for granted. I will not take these things for granted.
Timeless Secrets is where you can catch a glimpse of the mystical Mari. Mari is a certified intuitive success coach, a channel, ably assisted by her spirit guides, Asophocles and Andante. Mari is the catalyst for change. She will capture an audience to facilitate individuals on how to trust feelings and take responsibility for their lives, bringing them clarity, freedom, and peace. Mari uses the simple tools of laughter, song, and poetry, and her impish Scottish wit And of course, her spirit guides, Sophocles and Andante, are always with her. Her message is simple. Give choice, a voice, and always come from a place of unconditional love. You can be coached by Mari via phone or on Skype, or better still, in person. 707-934-7717 or email at maribest@gmail.com. That's M-A-H-R-I best, as in the very best, @gmail.com. Or on the web at maribest.com.
May you always walk in sunshine, slumber warm when night winds blow. May you always live with laughter, for a smile